And infrastructure is certainly the buzzword here in Toowoomba. I spoke earlier to the Federal Minister for Infrastructure and Regional Development, the Nationals' leader and Deputy Prime Minister, Warren Truss. Warren Truss, good morning.
Good morning.
You would presumably point to Toowoomba as an example of the sort of 21st century infrastructure regional Australia needs, but is it enough, fast enough?
Well, certainly there's a lot to be done around Toowoomba. It is a key regional hub. We have the commitment now, after years and years and years of talking, to actually build the Toowoomba Second Range crossing. The first sod will be turned in a few weeks' time, and that's an exciting project. We're working on the Melbourne to Brisbane railway line, and Toowoomba will be a key part of that project as well. There's a new airport. There's a lot of buzzing around about Toowoomba, and it's certainly been an example of a prosperous regional centre that has done very well over recent times.
There are still some infrastructure issues out here that are very frustrating for people, though, aren't there? Particularly, for instance, broadband. How do you get over that?
We're getting on with the job of speeding up the delivery. Many regional communities now are connected to wireless, and we're well over half the connections that are expected from the wireless network. The satellite is now in the sky. We're looking towards the rollout of fibre to the node in urban centres like Toowoomba. Some areas are already connected, and many, of course, are yet to come. So we've speeded all of that up. We're getting on with the job. We're many, many, many years ahead of the schedule that Labor had planned, and of course, well under the budget that they're talking about. So we're delivering. We've been in government 2 years. I think we've made a lot of progress, but I know there's still much more to be done.
Okay, the other issue here, as I'm sure you're well aware, is CSG. Now, you've said you believe farmers should have the right to say no to coal seam gas companies operating on their land. This is becoming very divisive out here, isn't it?
Well, I think that the situation in the coal seam gas fields has certainly improved over recent times as the companies have adopted a more constructive approach in dealing with landholders. It is true that early in the process there were some who exercised rights without recognising that they had to have a social licence as well, and that's caused a lot of bitterness which has endured. But many of the companies now have excellent relationships with their farmers. The farmers are in great are sharing in the resource wealth, and as a result, the local towns have benefited enormously.
Now, I appreciate that. Farmers don't want it. Should they be able to say no?
There are still legacy issues, but it's beyond question that the attitude and the cooperation between the companies and the communities has gone ahead enormously in recent years, and that's the kind of approach that we've got to expect from companies in the future.
But if farmers don't want it, should they have the right to say no? And will you be pushing state governments to change things to allow them to do that?
Well, I think in reality these days, with the capacity to drill sideways, that if one farmer does not want to be engaged and participate in the revenue stream from the coal seam gas, that does not any longer prevent the project from proceeding. So I think there should be more flexibility available. And once more, one land hold a personal decision is not enough to prevent others in the region from being able to benefit if they choose to participate. So I think there is a capacity now for more flexibility, although let's be frank, the fields are now largely developed. They've gone a long way and their plans for the future are largely assured. I think that with the benefit of hindsight, some things could have been done better. This has been an industry that's delivering massive amounts of revenue and has certainly revitalised many regional communities. They don't want it to go away. They want it to be better managed in the future.
Okay, just quickly, back to our earlier story about the ABC. Now, you've been critical of the decision to change programming in regional areas. The director of ABC Regional says listeners will get the same amount of local material, but it'll be delivered more efficiently. Isn't that exactly what your government wants the ABC to do?
Well, we certainly want the ABC to be efficient, and we want it to be in contact with its local audiences. I think what members of Parliament are a bit concerned about is that we had a briefing from the ABC about what their plans were for regional radio and television. That was only a few months ago, and now this radical change is occurring, and we felt left out of the loop. Now, often the ABC has made promises about better programs, and then that's just led to cuts in jobs, but more importantly, cuts in localism. And it's this kind of an approach where you can centralise everything and have it all done from one place. Well, why not centralise it in a regional community instead of centralising everything in Sydney? The ABC has developed a reputation for being Sydney-centric, the programming is designed to suit audiences in those very large metropolises. There's endless choice now from the ABC in radio and television in the cities, but country areas feel as though they're being left out and forgotten as a part of ABC's key charter. Now, I welcome the assurances that have been given in the last few hours about the fact that the ABC is not intending to make cuts. I still have very vigorously in my memory the time when the Howard and Anderson government provided $50 million to the ABC to improve services in regional communities, and they used some of that money to close studios. So there isn't a high level of trust there, and we'll be looking very carefully at what actually happens in the future and not just the rhetoric.
Okay, just one quick question on the Nationals' leadership, which is in the news again. Your party's federal president, Larry Anthony, has more or less endorsed Barnaby Joyce as the party's next leader, saying there's a tradition of leadership succession from deputy leader to leader. Do you think Barnaby Joyce would make a good leader, and is there a leadership transition underway?
Well, I'm sure that Barnaby would make a good leader, but that's a matter for the party room to decide, not the party organisation. I'm getting on with the job of trying to deliver infrastructure for regional Australia. I'm concentrating on that. There's still a lot more to do. There's still a lot of excitement ahead, and my concentration is on achieving those objectives, and of course building a strong relationship with Malcolm Turnbull in the coalition government.
Is there some pressure coming from your colleagues for you to step aside?
No one has spoken to have made that suggestion to me. I have received many assurances of their wish to support me into the future. I'm grateful for that. We've been a strong and united team, and I'm determined it will stay that way. And when the time comes for there to be a leadership transfer, I hope that that will occur in the usual orderly way in which it happens within the Nationals.
And you'll contest the next election?
Well, I've nominated. It's up to my party now to decide whether they want to endorse me, and I'm looking forward to the fight ahead.
Current Nationals leader and Deputy Prime Minister Warren Truss.